Broadcasting from the Portland campus of USM, online at usm.maine.edu.
The views expressed on Blunt are those of the individual producers and not those of WMPG, the University of Southern Maine, or any of Blunt's funders and supporters. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views.
To start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to die for them too. Especially the weather.
Tyler Simpson.
This is a call-in show, so call in with your opinions or your experiences about urban exploring at 207-780-4909. Join us as we take a look underneath the surface of underground Portland.
We have two guests tonight, Jeff Inglis, Nicholas Gervin, an urban explorer and photographer.
We also have Jeff Inglis, an award-winning editor and reporter from the Portland Phoenix.
So, to start with, how does Portland's underground rate? Are we average, exceptional, superb?
Well, there's 380 miles of underground passageways. Not all of them are big enough to probably go in, but a lot of them are. On the world scale rating, I would say we're maybe about a 5.
To a 10.
5.
To a 10, yeah.
Okay.
You mentioned the first one that you had been to, Jeff, was the old under Congress Street tunnel between the Portland Press Herald building at 390 Congress Street and the former printing press across the street.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, as I described in the piece, and we wrote about this with Gerv's help and pardon me, with some of his beautiful photographs back in March in the Portland Phoenix. It kind of looks like a junior high school hallway. it's closed to the elements. It's dry. It's tile floor, and if I remember right, a dropped ceiling, not unlike this one. It's not a particularly fetching place, but it was extremely utilitarian, and that was its design, was to carry plates from the composing and stereotyping rooms in the basement of 390 across the street to the old printing plant. Of course, neither of those buildings is owned by the newspaper or used by it anymore.
Right. Do you know what's in those buildings now?
Well, the 390 is going to be converted into a hotel at some point. I don't know what exactly the timeline is for that. And then
they're
the
going
old printing
to
plant, I don't know.
Keep the newspaper theme to the hotel, I think.
Are they really?
Oh, that's cool.
And then, I didn't know that. That's wild. And then I'm not sure what's being done with 389 Congress across
cool.
the street. But it's not a nice place. I mean, it's a fine place, but it's not nearly as interesting as some of the places that I think Gerv has been.
Not particularly aesthetically pleasing.
No.
There was mention of bowling alley next.
Yeah.
Apparently there are quite a few.
Seeing like 4 or 5.
Yeah, that's one of the funny things is that there's, you know, I don't know how many different rumors you had heard over the years.
Quite a bit, yeah.
But it seems like that's, you know, if you start asking people, hey, what about underground, you know,
that's
what do you think is underground Portland?
Say, yeah.
People are like, I heard there was a bowling alley somewhere under Portland. And then you ask them where, and they're like, oh, a friend, maybe, yeah. I heard, I saw, I think. You know, a few people, particularly those who grew up in Portland, will have an actual memory of having gone to one or another of the bowling alleys. Yeah. But so many people are actually didn't grow, you know, who live in Portland now and are of an age to remember aren't here anymore.
Right. We were looking at like comment threads on Facebook and stuff and mm-hmm. all kinds of different places. There were people talking about ones under the YMCA, which
yep.
I think you confirmed.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
There was also talk of one or perhaps two around the area underneath Portland Stage Company and the parking lot there.
That general area is kind of like the epicenter of the building-related tunnels
yeah.
in Portland. I mean, I don't know if there's another epicenter, but that's the one that everybody I talked to was yeah. always like the Eastland Park, the yeah. Portland Stage, like that.
Yeah. What's interesting is that there are different types of tunnels. So, like, what he's saying is the epicenter or downtown, there are lots of passageways. I mean,
yeah.
There's an engineering marvel underneath the city. Like, when it rains, water's got to go somewhere. And it doesn't just go down a little drain and shoot out a pipe. It has to be sloped right or angled right. And there's yeah. literally engineering that goes into it that's pretty impressive. It's mm-hmm. a working mechanical thing. It's a network. And it's totally unappreciated, of course. Who the heck's going to go, oh, it's amazing, it's a drain. But
it's not something you think about.
So. Yeah, but when you see it up front and in person and you can see it working, hopefully when it's not raining because you'll be dead, it's still pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But there are other tunnels and there are rumors of to why they exist or to who built them, and I've done quite a bit of research. And from what I find is no one really likes to talk about them. It's kind of like a secret, but not really,
yeah.
because everybody knows they're there. So
everyone's keeping it under wraps a little bit because
yeah.
it's their little
there's,
secret.
There's every city has tunnels, or else yeah. the city would be flooded. So it's not really a major secret. But
on the engineering side of things, I think we forgot to mention we're also going to have Michelle Clements calling in for 15 minutes later. She is the public relations person for Portland Water District.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that'll be interesting to get a more technical view of it.
She'll probably yell at me.
She'll probably yell at me. Hi, Michelle. She's probably listening now.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, well, as Gerv was saying, you know, there are different kinds of tunnels. One, you know, for example, those to move water
right.
around. You know, the ones that I was looking at in my part of this package was more about ones where people would go for a reason, like you'd go
yeah.
to a bowling alley or you'd go from one building to the next,
mm-hmm.
that were sort of utilities for humans as opposed to utilities for plumbing or, you know, cables.
Humans and cargo shipment.
Yeah.
Some
right.
things were moved underground. I have a theory that I've been working on because Portland was one of the first cities to go dry during the Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And
Maine had prohibition well before the rest of the country.
Yes, it was the first city to do it. I'm not saying that the tunnels were built for this sole purpose to move illegal alcohol, but I'm pretty darn sure that they were used to do that at certain times. If you note to
yeah.
where a lot of these tunnels go, they went to established bars at the time or established hotels.
Right.
Who were people who had a lot of money, and if they wanted to drink, they were going to because they had.
We were looking
money.
At that. It's fascinating.
There was also a lot of talk about, not particularly just in Portland, but in other parts of Maine, some underground railroad-related tunnels
right.
as well.
Mm-hmm. I was reading in Brewer that there were physical underground tunnels used to connect safe houses in Brewer.
Yeah, Brewer has some. Brunswick has some. I don't know the full extent of them, to be honest. I haven't done much research on them, but I know they exist, yes.
Right.
Cool.
Which is interesting because the Underground Railroad, a lot of the Underground Railroad wasn't actually physically underground.
Right. Yeah.
People
yeah.
imagine
it.
Secret.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was underground in that way. But then there are these
just
other areas
wraps.
That were literally underground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's interesting, too, is Portland has, to my knowledge, three underground rivers. And I've been in one. So they've taken a river and they've totally submerged underground. And
yeah.
the river still is functioning, obviously.
This doesn't fit here. We're going to put it underground.
Yeah. And so they can, you know, it's a city and all urban centers do that. They, you know, you go to bigger cities and there are major rivers that are underground. There was a recent documentary that was called Lost Rivers, and it was about finding and unearthing these kind of treasures, if you will. And
mm-hmm.
some of them were unearthed because they were like, wow, there's a beautiful river here. And like, make real estate go up and, you know, all types of reasons. One, why not look at the river? Why put
yeah.
it underground, you know? you know, but the urban centers are always changing. You know, they're building up and they're breaking down, and this is the natural course of a city. So, like your opening stated, cities are built up, and some things are just lost. They're just literally people get old, and it things get filed away, and next thing you know, you don't know where the river went.
So, well, you build up and up on top of old tunnels, and you get a lot of beautiful things hidden by, hidden down there.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I guess we'll go on to another question. Gurv, you must be familiar with the hazards of underground exploration.
Yes.
Could you tell me about some urban spelunking mishaps, perhaps?
There's been a few.
Is this the don't try this at home segment?
Yeah, don't try this at home.
Warning.
You know, I encourage you, if you're adventurous, to be adventurous, but you got to use your brain and you know, understand that you're taking sole responsibility for yourself. But some of the dangers to look out for, obviously, and the number one thing that any underground worker would worry about would be gases. They're invisible, they're odorless, they're tasteless, and they can kill you within seconds. It's literally you'd be there, you'd have a headache, and you'd be dead. I mean, that's how quick it can happen.
So do you wear a dust mask or
Dust mask wouldn't do it. A respirator wouldn't do it, although that's handy for other reasons. People like to dump illegal chemicals down the drains a lot, and being in an enclosed environment, if someone decided to do that down a drain, you could also pass out, drowned, or come, you know, die from the chemicals in the cell. So there, you know, a chemical respirator is something I always bring with me. Some people think that's overkill, but I'd rather be safe than sorry.
For sure.
Absolutely.
But back to the gas, it's a, you need to have a gas detector, a reader, and this will go off when you're in any area that has low oxygen or gases that could harm you, and you need to bug out as quick as possible if that goes off. So,
like the canary and the...
Yeah, yeah, you could bring a canary. That would work, you know. So those are the number one things. It's an expensive piece of equipment. It needs to be maintained. You need to, understand how to use it. You can't just buy it and go, now I'm all set. You know, it's you know, there's some training involved that, you know, I was lucky to pursue and follow up on. But other dangers are, you know, the number one thing is when it rains, no drains. The minute it rains and you're in a drain, you're either going to be extremely hurt or dead, most likely dead.
Huge amount of water flow.
The water flow is yeah. I mean, a sprinkle, you know, from a one town over from a connecting system can, you know, accumulate to a lot of water after that sprinkle's been collecting from every drain. And so, you know, a downpour is insane. You know, I've experienced some things where it started to rain and just out of curiosity hung around and took a picture just to be like, well, what is this really like? And it's scary. It's like, okay, so I imagine if it was any worse, this would be bad news, you know. There's, you know, the buddy system, never go alone. It's just, you know, silly to do that. I could go on forever about safety, really, common sense is you know, something you should use, definitely. Let's just put it at that.
Okay. We probably have time for about one more question before our caller. So, Jeff.
Sure.
So there's a lot of conjecture and storytelling, as the, you know, there's a lot of valid information, too, but how do you differentiate between the two, and how did you do that?
Well, I mean, basically, what I did, ultimately, and I think this is sort of the, you know, the best way I could come up with to think about it. If anybody's got better ways to think about it, I'm interested. But I sort of split things into three categories. One is places I had personally been and could vouch for that they exist. The second is places where I know people who have been and are reliable, as well as, in some cases, there are historical documents that support the existence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For example, the bowling alley underneath the Portland Museum of Art. I never found anybody who'd actually been in that. As best I can understand, it's probably been destroyed by the building of the museum itself.
Yeah.
Because it's not down there now. It's not underneath what they've got. So that were sort of two, you know, reliable substantiation, but no, I haven't seen it with my own eyes. And then the third category was things that sort of seemed to be really persistent rumors where I found a lot of different people talking about them, having heard about them, but nevertheless, nobody could show me, nobody that I talked to said, I've been there, and nobody could show me, you know, a map or another document that suggested where it actually was.
Yeah.
So those are the three, you know, and then you know, of course, beyond that, there's the purely fabricated, but...
There's a lot of purely fabricated.
Yeah.
There seem to be a lot of people just spreading rumors that they heard.
I heard everything from unfinished subways to...
Yeah,
that's a big one.
Cathedrals underground to, you know, people just like to spit rumors, you know.
Yeah.
So. And there's certain thing. I mean, I found something that I wondered if it might not have been a source of an underground subway rumor, because at the corner of India Street and Commercial Street, it was the
Archways?
Site of... Yeah, it was the site of the old, and I think it was the Grand Trunk, I'm not sure, railroad station. And they actually did have train tunnels underneath.
We now have our guest Michelle on.
Oh, great.
Michelle, can you hear us? I hear a busy signal.
We'll try to get her back. Oh, no. Okay,
So that was, you know, that might be, I mean, there were trains in tunnels that were underground.
There's also a river, India Street, that's one of the rivers that's underground, is it runs adjacent to Newbury and India through that little region there. Mm-hmm. So that's, I haven't explored that, but I know it exists. I've been peeking around in there, and it's real. I've seen it, through manholes, but, so I'm curious of that area, though. That's definitely interesting. Yeah.
But it's pretty clear there was not actually a working subway system.
Portland is too small.
Yeah.
Portland had an above-ground commuter rail or trolley.
A big trolley system.
So there was no need for underground.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that trolley system with ferries extended all the way out to Fort Williams and Cape Elizabeth.
Which they should bring back.
Yes.
Okay. Our guest Michelle is on again.
I believe she is actually on now. Michelle?
Yes. Hello.
Hi. This is Michelle Clements. She is the public relations manager at the Portland Water District, and we're so pleased to have you on the show.
Yes, well, thanks for the opportunity to discuss our local water system with all your listeners, you know, because our water system is virtually invisible, and water service is so reliable, we don't really get a lot of chance to talk about it. So we're happy to be here to have a dialogue about our Greater Portland's great tap water and the system that makes it possible.
Cool. So we have a couple questions for you, probably about 15 minutes.
Sure.
Do you want to go, Tyler?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Portland's population is growing, and the sewer system, I'm not sure how much work is done on it or not, but despite the growing population, what does it mean for the sewer system?
Well, I can tell you as far as delivering public tap water, drinking water. It's something that our engineering department takes into consideration when we are designing a system. Certainly pipes are sized appropriately. You know, they can't be too big because that would mean that there'd be stale water not getting used enough. It wouldn't be fresh. But on the other hand, if it's too small, it doesn't account for the growing population. So it's definitely part of our planning process.
Yeah. Okay. For sure. Let's see. I was wondering approximately how old the sewer infrastructure is in Portland.
Like I said, I can talk about the water system.
Yeah.
Water system is very old, actually. It's you know, some of our pipe dates back over 100 years old, back into the 1870s, when the system was first being developed. And it's not something that's just an issue for the Portland Water District, but our industry as a whole is really... this is a very significant issue for all of us, is that our systems are old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with it being so old, I know this might be more of a question for the engineering department, but what are the pipes made of?
The material has changed throughout the years. As I said, you know, some of these are 140 years old, so things have changed over the years. But half our system is made out of cast iron. The other half, ductile iron. There's some concrete, some plastic pipe in the ground as well.
Great. We were talking a little bit today about rain and how any underground tunnels or pipes have a huge influx of water when it rains. So what happens when it rains too much?
Like a heavy rainfall.
Yes. When we do get major rain events, it certainly is taxing for our wastewater treatment plants. And so there are collection systems in place, combined sewer systems, combined sewer overflows that alleviate some of that rainwater from coming in and overwhelming the wastewater treatment facility, which, you know, cannot handle all that rainwater at once.
Okay. Let's see. So also due to that, like, how are the water mains maintained?
The heavy rain isn't really a concern for the water mains and the infrastructure. The biggest issue that, you know, we see with the water mains, of course, is the age of the pipe and the replacement of this system, because it is underground. Getting back to the major issue that our whole industry is dealing with our aging infrastructure, it's, you know, because the water systems in the U.S. were built in the late 19th century and the early 20th century, the time has come that a lot of this pipe is reaching the end of its useful life. And we're seeing pipe replacement on a large scale now. 10% of our PWD's pipes are older than 100 years, and another 10% is between 80 and 100 years. So, that's really a focus for us right now, as well as, you know, our whole industry, and how do we plan and manage so that we don't see an increase in water main breaks and water outages and water quality issues. Our trustees are really looking at this issue seriously and considering their options to fund increases in investments in our water main system.
Right. Okay, I know in Maine we have really, really good water compared to the rest of the world, but what is the purity of Portland water? Like, I know there's low salinity and everything.
We are absolutely lucky to have such a fantastic water supply in Greater Portland. I don't know anyone in my office that doesn't drink the tap water. Mm-hmm. It tastes great, but it's safe and it's clean. And it all starts with the source. We have a pristine source, Sebago Lake, about 16 miles north. It's very forested around it.
Yep.
There's a lot of stewards of the lake that protect it, not just the Portland Water District, but the towns and the residents and even tourists coming in.
Yep.
So it's so clean that we have a waiver from filtration. So we don't have to filter the water because the source itself is so clean. And that's what our water quality, our water resource people are going to, they say, you know, that's the first line of defense. That is the best way to ensure that you're going to get clean water at the tap, is to make sure you're starting with a clean source.
So on a slightly different note, we know there are some drainage tunnels and just storm drains that are quite large and
open.
There are
Yeah.
And people, they are explored by people here or there. Does the water district frequently have problems with urban exploration within the pipes?
Well, I'm not aware of any problems with urban exploration. We do have large water mains up to 60 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
We would take any, we have water reservoirs and, water storage that, we are certainly would be concerned about any trespassing as it pertains to potential contamination with the water supply. That's something that's, very serious. And I know our staff goes through great lengths to ensure safety when they're entering these confined spaces. They can be very dangerous.
Right.
If I could chime in for a minute, I'd like to...
Sure.
This is Nicholas Gervin.
Yes. There is a difference between the pipes that are underground. Like we were talking about, some were made for human cargo or human passengers. Some are made for water. Some are made for sewer. Some are combined sewer overflows,
right,
like she talked about. So there is a variant different types of structures underground of all different sizes, some large enough to be in, some not. Most water mains are 8 inches in diameter. Portland is a big city for Maine, but it isn't New York City,
Well, they also have water moving through them.
Yes.
Regularly.
Exactly. And so as far as exploring the water structures underground, that's pretty much almost untapped.
Yeah.
I've never done it. I've never heard of anybody doing it, at least in this city.
Because the sites where water actually flows.
I guess they would probably have to be abandoned.
Yes, exactly.
Obviously, mm-hmm. If they have water running through them and they're
too
under pressure,
yep,
obviously,
yep,
can't really get in it.
That sounds like a pretty bad idea.
So those pipes with water flowing to actual people's taps are pretty much unexplorable.
There ain't people running around in your sink drain. Just so you know. It hasn't happened yet.
Take off the tinfoil hat.
Yeah. The stuff that I've been into are more the sewer systems themselves and the combined sewer overflows, as well as the human passageways. So,
mm-hmm.
And that would sum that up.
That which is already contaminated enough, too.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
All right. So...
It obviously takes a lot to move waste and water all around Portland, and there's got to be, we were talking about earlier, there's got to be a great network of pipes down there, and a lot probably went into constructing that, right?
Yes. In fact, I know, particularly in the Old Port area, when we have to do work on water mains, it can be very challenging because there is a lot of stuff under the ground, and it, may have been there for quite a while.
Yeah.
And so, there may be things on top of things. There's not a lot of space,
right,
really to for that type of thing. But, we have 1,000 miles of pipe, in 11 different communities,
mm-hmm.
And so there is a large network. Most of the water does flow by gravity down to the system, so we don't need a lot of extra equipment and pump stations for most of the water system. There are a lot of pump stations for the wastewater system because that's different. That's being moved.
I'd expect it's a lot easier to move the water around by gravity than in, say, a more built-up city like Boston or New York, where you have to have pressure to pump it up to the top of the building.
Right. I mean, it depends where the source is, and we do have water storage. About 25 million gallons of water storage, emergency water storage, which also helps to, keep the water flowing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
I believe we are approaching break soon.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes. Thanks. Thank you for thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Michelle. This was Michelle Clemens, public relations manager for Portland Water District.
Mm-hmm.
And
great,
that was,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was our technical view on the water systems beneath Portland.
Again, this show is on Underground Portland, that which is under the streets of Portland, and how it can be explored. We have two guests in, Jeff Inglis from the Phoenix, and Nicholas Gervin from... He is an urban explorer and photographer. This is a call-in show. You can call in any time. The number is
780-4909. That's 780-4909. And please call in with any stories of urban exploring, any rumors you may have heard, anything you'd like to share with us. That's about it. And we have our break now.
The weather tonight is mostly cloudy with a low around 48, south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming light and variable in the evening. Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 63, north wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming southeast in the afternoon. Tuesday night, patchy fog after 2 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 49, southeast wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening.
And W281AC, Gorham, Portland.
We dig, 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 dig,
it ain't no trick to get rich quick.
If you dig, dig, dig with a shovel or a pick.
In a mine, in a mine, in a mine, in a mine,
where a million diamonds shine.
We dig, 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 dig from early on till night. We dig, 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 dig up everything in sight.
We dig up diamond miles more, 1,000.
Home to work we go. I
All right, and we are back. This is Blunt Youth Radio with our show about underground exploring and urban exploring.
We are your hosts. I'm Tyler Simpson.
I'm Helen Cunningham.
This is a call-in show. You can call anytime with questions, comments, or your own stories about urban exploration at 207-780-4909. We have two guests here. Jeff Inglis, he's the editor of the Portland Phoenix, and an experienced writer.
Yes, and we have Gervin, who is an urban explorer and photographer.
So, to start with, Jeff, you wrote your article about underground Portland last March, I believe.
Yeah, I wrote a sidebar. Deirdre and Fulton wrote the main piece, yeah.
Did you see a lot of urban exploration interest or anything spring up because of that afterwards?
I don't know, you know, what happened in the urban exploring community. That's more Gerv's thing. But, it was something that people had been hearing about, mm-hmm. and talking about just sort of in passing for, you know, over many years. And I've been in Portland a long time and have heard lots and lots of versions of different things. And, you know, I'd sort of over the years just sort of kept notes of what I'd heard about and who I'd heard it from and stuff, figuring that at some point I would, you know, come together, you know, something would happen and it would become a piece. And somehow, and actually I don't know how, Deirdre McIrv and she came in all abuzz one day and was like, I met a guy who's doing this urban exploring, you know, in Portland, and I want to go with him and do a story about it. And I said, fantastic. I'll do the sidebar that I've been saving up, you know, all these little tidbits for years and years about, and track down as many rumors as I can. And It all came together, and it was, you know, it was great. And Deirdre had a fantastic time down there, and Gerv has some beautiful pictures.
Yeah, it really seemed like it worked out well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rumors are pretty easy to come across. Tyler and I have been reading some comment threads.
There's some ridiculous stuff out there.
Extremely entertaining.
Where are these comment threads? Did you guys post on like the Blunt page or?
Well, we found a Facebook group, the Portland Maine History 1786 to Present page, and someone had posted about the supposed underground subway system started in Portland, which
rumor from what I see.
Right,
we touched on that briefly.
Yeah, touched on that, and there's really no evidence that was ever.
Yeah, right. I would say 85% that's, you know, not happening.
Well, if you look at the geology under the city of Portland, that's
it would be practical to even
if
try.
I find it one day, you'll know.
There's also a lot of conjecture about underground bowling alleys downtown, which I know we also touched on.
Yep.
There's one person that says there was one at the YMCA building.
There was even somebody talking about a mass grave underneath Forest Ave.
Right, the Forest Ave catacombs.
That's the biggest rumor, disregard that one.
Yeah. There are.
It's pretty wild.
I mean, you know, again, like so many rumors, there are little grains of truth that may become extrapolated into these things because there are, in both the Eastern Cemetery and I believe the Western Cemetery, there are crypts that aren't really tunnels and they aren't really underground, but
they're just kind of in the in
they
a
are
hill
they're
or
they're
something.
Built into the hills and they are tombs or crypts or if you'd like to call them that.
And so people are buried in them, and you know, again, you get these like that's a potential seed for something that then relocated.
Someone exaggerates and says, well, what if it was here? And so as an urban explorer, I do a lot of research and I read all the rumors, and you got to weed through a lot of stuff, and I'm sure as you do when you are saving things, even things that are interesting, you know, of course it gets me, you know, excited. I'm like, well, imagine if that's real, and then I'm like, it's not real.
Well, and again, you look at the geology, you know, around Forest Avenue, and you start to look at the fact that it's a gigantic swamp.
Yeah.
The dead marshes.
You know, there is talk of tunnels around the Spurwink area. Is it Spurwink? Yeah, Spurwink out in Cape Elizabeth. Spurwink, but is that also the place that's out by Westbrook Street? That starts with an S.
That's a different area.
Blanking on that? But anyway.
Yeah.
You were talking about some new exploration around the Back Cove.
The Back Cove is, as many Portlanders will know, was closed down for several months. There was a project there that was to build a large sewer conduit, and this was a great thing, although it may have inconvenienced you for going around the boulevard through car traffic.
Yeah, that was a pain.
Foot traffic was open, which that was good for them to leave that open. But what they built is a gigantic underground conduit or tunnel that now stores the human waste. And before this, there were CSOs, combined sewer overflows, that during heavy snow melt or heavy rainstorms, that actually the plant would become overwhelmed, that the wastewater treatment plant on the east end is only so big and can only handle so much at a time. So during these giant storms we get occasionally, at least a couple times a year, the human waste was actually being dumped into the harbor, into the back bay through several pipes. And so with these new conduits built, it stores it. So they're able to plant can process it when it has the time and capacity to handle it.
That's so good.
So this is a great thing considering we are a seafood harbor city and we pride ourselves on our lobster. So let's not have our waste go where our lobster, you know, play. So
that being said, I believe when there's heavy rain, the sewage a lot of the time just runs right off into the ocean.
Yeah,
that's what he's talking about.
That's what I was saying.
And they're in a multi-million-dollar, multi-year project to fix that.
So this is the first conduit, and they're going to build four more, I'm sorry, over the next several years, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's a great thing. It's cleaning up the environment. It's part of the Clean Water Act. So we're jumping on board. And
great.
And I was able to document a lot of the construction, which was really cool to see the different techniques of how they did all this and how it all came together, and also just fun to be down there and be somewhere different than 99% of everybody else.
Although some piece of you may go there.
Yeah.
So there's some, you know, more far-fetched things here. Like one person is saying that there is an underground underwater tunnel that leads from Fort Gorges to Fort Preble.
That has some merit to it.
Really?
I've heard people talking about that too. And
I don't know necessarily about that particular tunnel. I can't say that it exists or doesn't exist. But what I did find in my research and talking to different people is those forts had communications via underground tunnel, which wires would run that they could communicate from island to island. It's the harbor defense of Portland, which there are something like 20 fortifications or something like that that most people don't even know exist.
Right.
Some of them are very old. House Island is probably one of the older ones. An amazing underground base, if you want to call it that. And it privately owned. They do tours. You can go out there during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
The owners recently had the island up for sale, so I don't know if they're still, what's going on with the tours, if they still own it or what's going on.
Yeah.
So the tunnels are real to some extent. Like I said, wires would go. Some of them are big enough to actually go under and go in, but I believe at some point you would go into the ocean.
Right.
And you would be scuba diving at that point.
If it's underwater, I doubt that it would be maintained.
Well, it's not maintained. Just because a tunnel is underwater doesn't mean it's filled with water. I've been in several tunnels where I've used GPS devices and I've later checked where I was, and I've gone underneath rivers or ponds, and I would see water seeping in from the sides, which kind of freaks you out. And I would obviously assume, I must be underwater, underground, and lo and behold, when I did the check, I was. And so, you know, there's the soil, and you put the tunnel, like bigger cities like New York, or, you know, ride subways through underground, underwater all the time, and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing you might find, if you look on charts of Portland Harbor, you'll see areas marked that say submarine cables.
Yep.
And some of those are related as well to the interfort transmission.
I'm going to have to stop you. Matt's we have a feature from a Blunt Radio member, Matt, who was searching for underground tunnels.
Right. Before we go to that, you can call in with your stories about urban exploring or any myths you may have heard. At 780-4909. That's 780-4909. We'd be happy to talk to you. And this is Matt's feature coming right up.
I was telling my dad I was doing a radio show about underground Portland. So me and him went to find a spot where there might be an underground tunnel near the Casco Bay Bridge. We looked for the tunnel. We walked around under the bridge where we thought the tunnels were, but we had no luck finding anything. Then we drove around for a bit and picked a few more places in downtown Portland that we heard might have tunnels. We went to what might have been the start of into where they might lead to, but we didn't find anything. I might be right, might be wrong, that the tunnels are myth and do not exist because it was nowhere to be found. For Blunt Youth Radio, this is Matt Osmond.
So, there's a lot of people searching for tunnels and finding them.
It's fascinating. I don't know what the draw is, but to me, I can speak on a personal level that everybody's an explorer. Everybody's an adventurer. Some people want to climb Mount Everest, and people in society and across the world will celebrate that if you achieve it. If you happen to climb into a tunnel in Portland, most people will pat you on the back and some people will shake their head. Realistically, these are all things of adventure, and everybody is an adventurer, whether they admit it or not. They all want to be. It's why you watch movies. It's why you read books about romance and adventure.
Yeah.
Right.
How about don't just watch it and don't just be entertained by it. Go do it.
Yeah.
It's liberating. It's character building. It's fun. Quite simply.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people learn a lot from doing that, but a lot of people just talk about it too, and that's where the all these myths exist.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think with everyone having smartphones, people just want to believe these legends and, oh, I'm going to tweet that, you know? Just
I don't know if smartphones have to do with it. I mean, it certainly does. I mean, you can watch people, you know, walking around the streets and they're not even paying attention
right.
to
going
walking
to a
around
coffee
above
shop
ground.
And
you know, and so this idea that there's something secret and unseen is pretty cool, but, you know, just put down your phone and there's a bunch of stuff that's secret and unseen. You don't have to go underground. Like, there's cool stuff up
above ground. I feel like our society is driving towards a very unhappy place, if you will, where they believe they're happy by the things they can consume or the things that they can be a part of socially and things like that. And I mean, people nowadays want to take a trip because they want to get away from everyday life, and they call a booking agent and they spend thousands of dollars to go fly to some resort where all these people are going to bombard you with trying to buy stuff, and you get the tourist tour.
You've got a planned vacation.
Yeah, it's everything's mapped out, and it's where is the adventure in that? What are you getting away from? You're leaving one lifestyle to just slightly change it
to continue on to a slightly altered.
And everybody has their own level of being comfortable with travel and adventure, and I have things I'm afraid of that I face. I'm afraid of these tunnels, to be honest, and it's the fear that actually keeps you safe. So it's okay to admit that. Well, it is fun and exciting, and I have a blast, but there is always that little bit of fear. But the point is that what is life if you don't live it?
And you got to step out of your comfort zone.
Occasionally, you do, and you have to push yourself. And you'd be surprised at what you're made out of, and also the bonds that you can make with the people you share that experience with, and things like that.
Well, and I like the idea too that you don't actually have to go all that distance. It's
very good point.
It's
right here. And people always ask me. I have conversations with people at bars, and they're, oh, well, have you gone here? Are you gone there? And we talked about something in Antarctica, which would be amazing. and I did respond, you can have an adventure right here in your backyard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
The adventure is everywhere. It's a mindset. It's something you pursue. It's not something that you walk up to and find or pay $1,000 to go do.
It's something just waiting to be uncovered.
Adventure is free.
It's there, Whether it's beneath your feet or all around you.
Nothing. For those who may walk away from this show with a renewed sense of adventure, whether that be exploring their own backyard or going into a tunnel, if they are going into a tunnel,
what are the legalities like surrounding that?
Well, obviously there are trespassing issues that could arise, and you can get caught and you can go to jail for that. It depends, you know, on where you are and what you're doing. And there are some places you could get permission to go, which some people are actually happy to share locations with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't say what you should or shouldn't do in that area. Again, it's your comfort zone. One way of looking at it is a round trip to Hawaii would cost you a couple $1,000s, and a trip adventure getting busted underground in Portland might be a couple $1,000s. So,
and there you can stay at the sunny Cumberland County Jail.
Exactly.
That's right.
They even have free meals.
Yeah.
But I think that most people in society, and you know, even law enforcement and to some degree city officials, they understand where urban exploring comes from and what the drive is. It is documentation. It is our mm-hmm. history. It is something that is important and part of this city, and it has merit. And it's like we're almost renegade archaeologist might be a way to, or you know, to explain it. But it's done responsibly, and you know, there's risk in everything. People die in car accidents every day, but we don't all outlaw cars
right.
and driving. I mean, more people die that way than a lot of reasons, a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to go climb Mount Washington. It's not against the law. You know, the whole privatization of property is, again, something that we could talk hours about and what is wrong with that whole scenario.
So this is Underground Portland and our show on urban exploring, etc. Call in with your own stories at 780-4909, 780-4909. Once again, this is Urban Underground Portland.
I think one of the things that Gerv was just saying about doing things responsibly, I think if people, I mean, and I haven't, you know, the places that I've been, I've had permission to be from the people who owned the property.
We need to hang out more.
Okay. cool. You know, but I think, you know, if you're in a place, and I haven't been underground in places that you're not supposed to be. I have done my fair share of what other people would call trespassing above ground. And, you know, but I think, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're not there to do any damage, if you're not trying to infiltrate the drinking water system of Greater Portland, you know, I mean, hey, they want to stop you because they want to stop you, but they're not going to be, you know, it's different if you're there to...
Yeah.
It's exploratory.
You know, to make a mess and or to damage property.
It's one thing if you're a guy with a case of beer wanting to just, like, trash the place with your friends, but if you're a guy going in there with a camera,
because you think it's beautiful,
yeah.
So, speaking of photography, there seems to be like a rising interest in photography in underground places.
Yeah, it's we live in a day and age where everybody carries a camera. We all have cameras in this room, and like he said, he has several on him right there.
I have four because I have a phone and a tablet. Yeah, each have front and back.
Exactly.
Probably 10
so
in this room right
I mean, everybody who has basic technologies nowadays has a camera, and so to me, I think it's important that as a photographer that we focus on what we're actually shooting. Not saying that the subject matter of the past, before cell phones and technology, small cameras, wasn't important, but I think it's even more important now, the fact that everybody is taking pictures.
Yeah.
So to separate yourself or to step it up or to push the bar, push the envelope, it is now, what are you taking pictures of and why are you taking pictures of that?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can go around town and take a picture of all the beautiful sights of Portland, and they will be remarkable photos, and some of acquaintances I know to take pictures like that, and I think they're beautiful. And,
yeah.
and sometimes I'm even jealous of them. But personally, I can't. When I go downtown, I don't see photographs. I see tourist buildings, and
it's a show.
It's a distraction to me because I know that there are way more interesting things just under my feet or above my head, or the people themselves are more interesting.
It's a matter of finding
street
them.
Photography.
It's beautiful, but it's also what is there for everybody to see.
Yeah, and not everybody shoots the same thing, and that's great, and that's important. But I think what's why urban exploration photography is getting, I wouldn't like to use the word popular, but is becoming an actual credible niche, is it's a lot of fun, and you really are revealing things to people that they never would have known existed. And what better thing to do with a photograph than to show somebody something that they didn't even know existed. That's what makes a great photograph, is capturing a moment or capturing something that you didn't even know existed. By definition, I think it's a great niche that's well underestimated in the photography world.
I know we were looking at your website, like scrolling through your photos, and just going, whoa, oh my gosh, whoa. Well,
and that's one of the cool things, again, to go back to responsibility, that, you know, we've all heard the sort of wilderness ethos of take only pictures, leave only footprints.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, don't go there and you know, there are places to tag and put graffiti and stuff like that, and that's, you know, one of the aspects of graffiti culture is, mm-hmm. you know, to tag to show that you could get there, that you could accomplish this amazing feat of acrobatics to get up the side of a building or whatever. You know, if someone were to tag something in a tunnel, nobody's going to see it.
Right.
No one would see it anyways, you know,
Three people might see it in the next 10 years. You know, much better, and in fact more responsibly in general, to take a picture and share that with people and say, hey, here's this thing. Your tax dollars built it. In many cases, not all cases, but, you know, here's this thing. And okay, fine, you didn't go there. You don't necessarily perhaps want to go there. You want to go do something else adventurous.
But you live right next to it.
But you live next to it, and it's here. And isn't that cool? And it's
you bring up a good point, too, with the your tax dollars pay for it. And again, this goes back.
Right.
Getting back onto that is our society is constantly making laws, whether it be locally or city or state or federal. There's so many laws nowadays. If you went back to the 1950s and you told all the people what the laws were going to be nowadays, they would probably laugh their off. It would just be like, are you serious? Like, I mean, not saying that, you know,
I mean, all laws of them, that it's really just don't be dumb.
Laws,
yeah.
The laws that are produced in the name of safety, especially when safety hazards haven't even occurred yet, are kind of jumping the gun. And unfortunately, I personally feel that sometimes someone should or may get hurt doing something, and then a law should be considered. But jumping the gun and saying you can't panhandle in a median strip,
I think
that's
oftentimes
against the Constitution. I mean, is the Constitution mean anything?
Yeah.
I know it's a far stretch from what we're talking about, but again, it's a law that was brought up because they said, well, we don't want people to get hit. And it's like, well, people walk across the medians because
right,
that's where the sidewalks go. So we don't want to use sidewalks anymore? I mean, I understand and I want people to be safe too, but sometimes you just got to let things go. Somebody's going to get hit. And that's life, unfortunately.
A lot of times
I've been hit four times.
Safety.
I'm still standing.
Yeah, like they say it's about safety often, but really it's more about
control.
Liability,
control, and money. It's really what it's about.
Right. People in high places saying, I don't want this.
Yes. And power.
Power. Yeah. Well, people like to abuse power. If I have the option to make rules and make laws, well, I have to do my job and let's make some rules and some laws. And they're going to do it, whatever and they'll justify it for some reason in their head. But, and I'm not knocking anybody who's doing that job. They're doing a great job, I think. But some things just, you know, it's just overboard. It's overkill.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make enough laws don't make things safe because laws are just things that tell you not to do it. They just allow people to get prosecuted for doing things that they don't want them to do. That's what a law is. I can prosecute you.
As much as I'd love to continue talking about laws.
Yes. We're not lawyers.
What a fascinating subject. Yeah. We are running short on time. We have about 3 minutes left of our show. This is Blunt Youth Radio and our show on Underground Portland and urban exploring.
I'd like to thank our guests again. Nicholas Gervin, wonderful photographer and urban explorer.
Thank you.
And Jeff Inglis, who is an award-winning editor and reporter for the Portland Phoenix. Thank you so much, guys.
Of course, Michelle Clements, who called in earlier from the Portland Water District.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michelle Clements.
We'd also like to thank our engineers this evening. Helen...
Izzy Terraciano and Adam Bradstreet. Thank you so much.
Next week, our show is going to be on DJing and SoundCloud culture. Thank you all for listening in.
I'm Helen Cunningham.
And I'm Tyler Simpson.
Thank you for listening to Blunt.